You don't need a system outage to know when your PPE isn't delivering what it should. Maybe pricing takes an extra step to verify, maybe updates are taking longer than expected, maybe your team has built workarounds just to keep loans moving. What starts as a few small delays can gradually become the way the work gets done. The reality is, a modern PPE should do more than provide pricing. It should deliver real-time accuracy, seamless workflow execution, intelligent automation, and the confidence to act without hesitation. It should help your team move faster, operate more efficiently, and focus on performance, not process. So ask yourself, is your PPE helping your organization perform at its full potential, or is it forcing your team to work around its limitations? Take a closer look at what you should expect from a modern pricing engine. Visit optimalblue.com/optimalblueppe. Again, that's optimalblue.com/optimalblueppe. Stop accepting friction as part of the process. Make sure your PPE is helping your team move faster, execute smarter, and capture every opportunity.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Senior Vice President of Hedging and Trading Operations at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to first week of June. We've got a great show for you today. We are here to help you focus on what's most important, whether you're an originator, capital markets person, or just someone interested in mortgage industry and some great market commentary. In a minute here, Alex and I will give you a little bit of a market update, a little bit to talk about here, and a little bit coming up later this week. After that, I did a great interview with a gentleman named Phil Gans. Phil is someone I met just a few weeks back and wanted to introduce him to our listeners. Phil runs a newish mortgage company called Next Wave, and they're a mortgage broker and just have a very interesting business model. And I just think Phil's an interesting person with some great ideas about our industry, but also just about business and leadership in general. So we'll talk with Phil here in a minute. So stay tuned for that. In the way of market data, OBMMI 6.5, kind of hovering around there ever since the war with Iran started. The 10-year spiked over 4.5 today with, once again, the ping pong ball has been flung across the table. And this Monday, we are questioning the ceasefire, questioning the deal in Iran, kind of the same deal we've been working with back and forth over the past few months. We did hit 4.6 a couple weeks ago, which was a 15-year record for the 10-year. So we're a little bit below that, but we're creeping up on that number again. All right, Alex, let's get into some market chatter. Maybe just start with some numbers, and then we should touch on the conflict as well, even though it feels a little bit like Groundhog's Day. So we saw inflation data last week about as expected, even though it's elevated versus what we would have seen and expected before this war in the Gulf, right?
Right. The number came in at expectations, right around 3.8% on non-core CPI. This number, again, was expected, but it's about a full percent higher than it was on the February release before the beginning of this conflict. So again, really just driving home the point that these raised energy costs on the back of this conflict are producing some inflation here at home.
Yeah. All right. And so a war that we thought was going to take 4 to 6 weeks is now, I believe, entering its fourth month. Oil is, you know, between $90 and $110 a barrel. Obviously, that is a problem for inflation. And that kind of keeps us in the U.S. anyway, focused on just this war in Iran, right? But at that same time, not totally by coincidence, there's also this war in Lebanon, mostly between Hezbollah and the Israelis. That feels like it's never, like it has not conformed to any of the ceasefires that we've been engaged with the Iranians. We've also been lobbing bombs back and forth between us and the Iranians. I mean, where are we really at with these multiple conflicts in the Middle East?
Right. The when you hear the term ceasefire. That ceasefire is in regards to the U.S. and Israel and Iran, the state that you can find on the map. And that ceasefire has held pretty steadily. There have been, you know, here and there, little strikes by both sides. But what has been a through line through this entire conflict from when it began in February has been a conflict that was entirely being fought by the Israelis against Hezbollah, which is an armed group in Lebanon that is backed by Iran. So you can't really find Hezbollah on a map. They are a political party in Lebanon, and they have a military wing, and that is who Israel is you know, attacking it in active conflict with. And that conflict had there was never any ceasefire in that particular conflict. They are in the hinter regions, northern Israel, southern Lebanon. At this point, Israel has fully invaded, you know, southern Lebanon in an effort to stamp out Hezbollah. And that conflict has actually, during this period of ceasefire, has actually escalated quite a bit. In fact, over the weekend, Netanyahu ordered a further escalation, further incursions into Lebanon. So I think that's part of the reason. This morning, you know, we've seen, you know, a spike in oil prices, spike in the 10-year, spike in, you know, U.S. Treasury rates. Is one, the ceasefire that is, again, between the U.S. and Iran, we're still just kind of kicking it out 60 days at a time. You know, there's really no resolution on the horizon. And then at the same time, there is this same, you know, continuous conflict that's going on, that's underlying, that really isn't picked up as heavily here in the mainstream press, just because this isn't the thing that's driving those energy prices that the U.S. is so sensitive to.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of maybe out of sight, out of mind, but it is a major, as you said, a major escalation in southern Lebanon, and it's still in that same region, so that you still worry about any sort of possible contagion or just breaking across borders. The conflicts that are going on there. And as you said, there still is, I believe over the weekend, the Iranians lobbed a couple of missiles over at our bases, I think in Kuwait, which is
correct.
Obviously provocative. So then we intercept those missiles typically, but then that's an act of aggression that we have to retaliate against. So that we're kind of focused on that again. And then but still have what's going on in Lebanon. So something to keep an eye on, or at least to when you're watching the news, when you're trying to keep up on news, you kind of have to search for that one versus it being at the headline level, because we are, this is a war that our country's literally in, but also President Trump is obviously going to talk, is fully focused, it seems, on the our side of that war. Until anything is done to resolve that, we're obviously going to have the Strait of Hormuz completely shut down, at least for practical purposes. So we're going to continue to see inflation that all stems from mostly oil just being elevated and being an input for everything in this country that we consume. But the rest of the world seeing it a lot worse. Like that bears repeating as well. We don't get a lot of the news from Europe, but we have a lot of our own energy here in the U.S. So we have much less of a shock. Sure, airline tickets are more, gas is a bit more, but in other parts of the world that are feeling a major 100% shock versus kind of the 20-30% that we're seeing.
Spot on. Yeah, no, Europe and you know, Asia, you know, Japan, Korea, these countries that really rely on a lot of imported fuel, far more so than we do, as well as China. They've seen increased costs. And then, you know, in some more of the third world spots, Africa, Southeast Asia, they are seeing, you know, full on shortages. You know, it's not just, you know, gas is expensive. It's that gas isn't available at any cost, at any price point. So yeah, we're definitely insulated here for the time being. They do expect, and I've explained this a couple times now, how, you know, if you're looking at a world map, you know, kind of these price hits are going to be seen southeast, and then they're kind of going to move northwest across the map as these growing seasons and everything. You know, you need energy for agriculture as well. So we're going to see those shocks kind of move across the map. So, you know, without any resolution, I do think we can see, you know, prices here in the U.S. go a little bit higher. But to your point, you know, we should be thankful that we are a net energy exporter and have those resources here at home as well.
Right. So it's interesting to dig deeper. If you're, again, interested in just the world oil and energy, you know, market, the exchange process, it's worth Googling more on that too, whether you're reading about some of the black market oil that is making its way from Iran to places like China, or just the overall, as you said, kind of the stranglehold that's making it so some countries literally don't have fuel. And also how long, there's this debate about how long can the Iranians go without the economic benefits of selling their oil. with you can't assume that they're selling no oil. That's kind of the trick there, right? Is there are millions of barrels of oil somehow getting out of the Strait of Hormuz, somehow getting through to places like China, where they're paying probably pennies on the dollar, but still being able to liquidate, so to speak, that oil in other parts of the world. Meanwhile, they're stashing it throughout their infrastructure in Iran, waiting for either some kind of resolution or just for some of these alternate routes or these shortcuts to get figured out. Just a super interesting dynamic going on there. It's difficult to kind of think about all the different facets of it and how it might play out.
And right now it seems like both sides feel that they hold the cards to win the game. And it's really kind of they're playing a game of chicken, I think, just kind of staring each other down, seeing who can have their arm twisted behind their back longer before they kind of, yell uncle. But yeah, no, there's a lot of very interesting, and it's far outside the purview of this podcast, but there's a lot of interesting debates right now going on in the energy community and energy traders on what the bottom is, so to speak, or rather the top in regards to energy and the bottom of the barrel scraping out the last little bit of oil,
so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, to bring it back to rates and the mortgage industry, doesn't seem likely we get under 6.5%-ish on the 30-year until we have some kind of resolution, mainly because of inflation. We have the new Fed chair coming in for this next meeting, Kevin Warsh. Certainly not expected that we'll get a cut. Probably another pause, possibly a hike at some point second half of the year. Just, not great outlook for rates right now. We have unemployment report this week, which is the most important number that's going to come out this week, most likely, unless there's some kind of black swan. So what are we expecting there? What should we be, hoping for or worried about?
And that's the thing about we were really, before this conflict broke out, we were really nailing in on the jobs number every month and just seeing, when's that tipping point for, when we can justify our rate cut. And right now, to your last few points, I really see very few downward pressures on rates, especially from the traditional avenue of, the Fed cutting that short-term lending rate, and it feeds through to your longer-term rates. Right now, the jobs number on Friday isn't expected to be a blowout in either direction. It's really expected to be right where it has been the last few months, which has been interpreted by the market as, filling, the needs. But, we don't have a job shortage or a surplus of jobs. We'd really be looking for a shortage of jobs and unemployment ticking up pretty substantially for us to expect a rate cut anytime this year.
Right. So to paraphrase, pre-Iran war, we were getting close to justifying kind of a preemptive cut, right? As the job market was starting to slow down, we felt like we had inflation mostly under control or headed back towards 2%. So we could justify cuts to kind of stoke the economy a little bit, get things moving, stave off any sort of deflationary pressure or disinflationary. But then we have the Iran war and we've kind of lost all that justification. So unless we get a, half million job crater, like negative jobs number this Friday, we're likely, even if we're close to zero, we're probably still looking at the rest of the year being a stagnant interest rate market.
Right. Right. Yeah, very much so in agreement. Yeah. Even before the Iran conflict, we were trying to tease out, rate cuts were by no means certain. We were trying to tease out, what's the impact of AI? What's the impact of the immigration policies that are counteracting some of these layoffs we're seeing? What is the actual, net neutral jobs number here in the States? That Friday number is expected around 90,000, which is on the lower side of where we've come to expect it to be. It's usually in the 110s, but a 20,000 job difference over 1 month is by no means clearance to cut rates.
Yeah, with immigration policy still having an effect on how many jobs need to be created to keep us stable. At 4.4%, the Fed and everybody's going to look at that as full employment. So we'd have to get closer to 5 at this point. It used to be like 4.7, 4.8 before the Fed is even under any sort of pressure to act, even with inflation being where it is.
Yeah. And just to put some, raw numbers that aren't percentages on that, like a half, right now we're at 4.3%. To get to 4.8%, it's a whole 0.5% change. That's half a million jobs. So
that's a big bogey to hit.
Yeah.
for our hopes that rates go down in the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good stuff, Alex. What else do we have?
That's really the headline this week. Just keep an eye out for any changes in the situation in the Middle East. We're getting pretty heavily teased last week that there was going to be some sort of deal, but based on how the markets are reacting this morning, it seems that we're less close to a deal than was expected last week.
Hey, we're back to where we were once again. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, here's to hoping for better momentum in the resolution of the Iran war this week, but otherwise look out for that unemployment number. And thank you very much, Alex. Good talking with you as always. And we will transition to talk with Phil. Thanks, Alex.
Appreciate you.
Today's guest is someone I had the opportunity to talk with a few weeks back. I think he's a super interesting guy with some great thoughts about our industry, but also just about building businesses in general, and also some really good ideas and thoughts about leadership and competitive philosophies. So I wanted to ask him to come on the pod to talk about these things. His name is Phil Ganz. He's the president of Next Wave Mortgage, a wholesale lender that's found some, I'd say, very interesting ways to grow quite a bit faster than what our industry is experiencing right now. So glad to have you on today. Welcome, Phil.
I am so excited to be here. It's an honor to be on your podcast and ready to bring value to the audience.
Right on. Thank you for saying that. And yes, we're excited and honored to have you as well. Just to get right into it, could you tell just the audience a little bit about Next Wave and what y'all are doing that's different than what maybe we think about as a traditional growing mortgage business?
Yeah. So Next Wave Mortgage, you know, we started the company in a state that we were never from, Florida, where I moved 2 years, 7 months ago. And we're a broker, and I mean a true independent broker. So we don't have market share of any one investor, I think, over 20%. So there's many different people, and we like the bigger companies, we're really independent of always trying to put the customer first.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, so you're a broker, so you kind of have you've got that flexibility that's always been associated with being a broker lender. You could work with the UWMs of the world, or you can work with some of the much smaller guys just to get whatever kind of rate you're looking for, but also the exact right product for a borrower.
Really, right? It comes down to the product, you know? And to be able to deliver the product, you know, at Next Wave Mortgage, we do a lot of affordable housing. We do a lot of down payment assistance, you know, programs. And we kind of, you know, we got into it. And just so the audience knows, we have a lot of websites that bring in a lot of clients. This is what kind of like helped us grow. We get a lot of business coming through our doors. Give you an example. We own, like, say, Hometown Hero Loan Program. That's like the number one loan program in the state of Florida. We have a lot of those domain matches. And what for the audience is, we own the answer for the Google search. So we have a lot of people applying. And so we've really focused in and honing in on helping first-time home buyers achieve their dream. And this is like a big thing. I think a lot of people look at other types of loans and they look at other types of stats, but we've really tried to focus in on getting people into their first house.
Right. Can you elaborate a little bit more, as much as you're willing to talk about, sort of to our listeners, about how you get those leads, how those borrowers come to you, and that whole
Actually, I'll
Google
go
search.
Into great detail. People are here for detail. Right. I'm going to get into the detail. I'm going to give you all the secret. And what I will say to people that are listening to this, the last employee we had to let go, you know, he's like, you have to give me 200,000 or I'll tell everyone your trade secret. So what I'm going to tell you was the same thing that he wanted 200 grand for. What we do is we do something so simple. It's called domain matching. So, for example, if you and if like the number one program is Hometown Hero Loan Program, if you Google Hometown Hero Loan Program into Google, we come up number one. And so what we've done is, and anyone can do this, you could look at the search results, right? The history, the volume, and be like, oh, this is a high answer. And a one or two page website, that's it. That's high quality. will be number one on Google, guaranteed. In fact, we get so many leads now. I mean, we're over approaching 1,700 a month and growing pretty quick. In fact, we don't even create websites anymore because we can't even, our leads are going way faster than right now than our capacity to like help out people. This is something really big. And we learned it through actually losing is because originally we had these like websites. Our first website was Make Florida Your Home. And it was a big hit. We were getting almost at our height 50,000 clicks in a month. I mean, I think our top day was almost 300 applicant leads, people that wanted to apply. What happened to we couldn't handle it. But, you know, this is what I tell people is that it was such a success. What happens is every 90 or so day, Google has core updates. And we lost almost everything overnight, especially with AI. So we said, all right, how do we defeat Zillow? How do we win? And I'm telling people right now, here's your $200 million answer. You just need a one or two page website. And that's it. You don't have to be fancy. It just has to be high quality. He said, well, what do you mean high quality? It has to make sense. Yes, AI can help you structure what it is, but you actually have to put in the effort. In fact, that's why the guy had to go. The guy had to go because he did not meet my quality standards. And I tell people, there are no shortcuts to success, only long cuts. I tell people that failure. His last month was, you know, 88 websites, and I think we got one lead a month out of it. This is your story. Like most of our other websites are generating so many leads, we can't handle it. It's just he wanted shortcuts. And this is the opposite of my philosophy, is high quality. And if you look at successful people, like when Steve Jobs fired his top engineer, they said, why did you fire him? He's like, well, he wasn't obsessive. You know, because Steve Jobs was obsessive with the fonts. He was the best engineer that was not obsessive with fonts. And that is exactly the way you need to be obsessive if you're creating your one or two page website, is that, you know, find something that gets a lot of search volume. And then that search is now your website, whatever that phrase is. You become the answer. And that's how we did it. We have so many leads. It's actually led to, you know, two pretty good partnerships with these Zillow real estate companies. For what they are, the two biggest ones, one in Florida and one in Texas, we do business with both of them. By the way, I will say this, is that created a new problem, because when you get first-time homebuyer leads, it's different than the playbook of Zillow, right? For people, your audience that may not realize, the playbook of Zillow is, on the realtor side, is, hi, I'll meet you at the property, and don't say anything. Just like show up as quickly as you can. And that's a different than when you have a first-time homebuyer lead, because a first-time homebuyer lead, here's what you do to convert. The first thing is you create alignment. This is very important to close deals. You create alignment with the customer, exactly what you offer and what their goals are, and you ask them questions. This is very important. You always need alignment in any relationship, especially if someone's brand new at something. Like, you can't have to do it. The second step is that you need contrast. What do you do completely opposite than the competitor? You can't be a little better. You need to be the best, right? You need to be completely the opposite. So if it's a yes or no question, you need to be the best. Like, we offer down payment assistance. That is the opposite versus a lot of companies that just don't do that. So we show the contrast. And then once you have the contrast and you have the alignment, at that point, you start to build the relationship and ultimately close the client, which was different than the Zillow, complete opposite. So that is, you know, a big thing that the audience can take away, is sometimes not realizing the playbook that a lot of these online leads are coming through, if they're on Zillow or a realtor, and they get sucked into that game. And all they really need to do is create that alignment, hit them with the contrast, and then build and close. So we've done really well. We're going to do better on this. We had a lot of failure. People don't want to talk about their failures.
That's how you learn.
Yeah. And just to let people know, in December, we were like at $72 million for the like value of what the company would be doing. Now I think we're at like $152 million, and we'll probably be at $300 million by the end of the year. So we're going to like 4X where we were. And so that's what we're up to. That's the struggles we face. That's how we've like accomplished a lot of it. I think our bigger, you know, what our goals are, where we're going to convert more, because our conversions are horrible. People are like, yeah, what are your conversions right now? I mean, we don't have enough people to handle it. So it's less than 1%. You want to be typically 2, 3, 4, 5%. And when you're at like, it's because like, you know, things come up and we don't have enough bodies.
Yeah, but the notional numbers are huge, right? Like, I hope people are finding this as interesting as I did. I don't know or maybe I got sold by Phil and his pitch, but just this, I haven't been on the production side of mortgage for many years. And I know back then leads were hard to come by. They were expensive. And I think that's still the case in a lot of ways, unless they come from a realtor, which you're kind of covering with these realtor partnerships. But then I think it's worth doubling down on this whole kind of search engine optimization meets creative product advertisement angle that you guys have teed into as well, which is crazy that you're just kind of letting this out there, because it seems like
I want to let you know the brilliance of it is, like, what do you pay a month? Look, we always reinvest, but once you have a site done, say you have a site and it gives you like 50 leads a month, that site costs you $0 to basically maintain, an annual hosting fee of $9. So while it took you maybe a day or two to like do your website, we can do them in an hour, but let's just say it takes you 2 days to do one site. That one site could give you 50 leads, 100 leads a month, every month, with no additional cost. But I say it because I want to help people. Because right now, the information I just told you, you could take, and if your wife does a coffee shop, or your spouse does anything in any small business, you could instantly rank and be number one for what you want to be. And it's just not mortgages. I think people miss this.
That's not a new concept. The search engine optimization business has been around since the internet's been around, right?
But the big thing is, you just need to do it with a 2-page website or a 1-page website, not anything more than two pages.
Click here.
It actually works in reverse. It's like, no way. After 2 pages, it's like, forget it. I'm just telling you guys, look at my best site. My best site, here's what I would tell people. If you go on my best site, Make Florida Your Home. Check it out. Make Florida Your Home. This site looks incredible. It is unbelievable. Make Florida Your Home. Then you go to my 2-page website that I haven't updated in like a year, called Hometown Hero Loan Program. You know, you can Google Hometown Hero Loan Program Florida. This thing gets like 300 leads, 6X the leads. You know, and you're like, no way. Because you'd be so amazed of how nice Make Florida Your Home looks in comparison to this. It doesn't matter. Nice, it needs to be the way AI and the search engines are working today. You're overrating, because I will tell you, Make Florida Your Home is the nicest looking website.
It is pretty good looking. I'm pulling it up right now. This is pretty good. Yeah.
Because I'll also tell you this. Over time, it ranks higher. So we just didn't like really like update the looks, just because it like works and it generates so many leads. But our other websites that we create now over time, and that's what happens, is that people give up on like this 1 or 2 page website. But that's how it happened. Like, we had just, it was a crazy concept that randomly was starting to work when one site was tanking. We were getting like 3 leads a month from like Hometown Hero Loan Program, and just built over time. It was an accident. And then the accident became a strategy. And you're like, well, Phil, if you had to do this tomorrow, like you couldn't do mortgages. It would work in any industry. You name it, we can do it. Because all you need to do is just look at the search results. The facts are already there. You can go to SEM Rush for like $50 a month. You could find out everything that you'd ever want. Get the data and then create your one or two page website. And it's like you could just do this again and again. And you could take your biggest real estate competitor. You see their top pages. And then you could take their top pages and just make them the single page websites. You could do that with versus a lot of companies. But I just tell people this, you know, because we created a huge lead problem. And now we're working on the conversion problem, right? Which we're going to do. We know how to solve it. So we're now focused on fixing our conversion problem. You need to kind of approach this in the beginning, more of like when you're trying to do marketing and generate leads, it has to be more of like a long drive competition. Yeah,
you want to take big swings. Every producer does,
hack.
Right?
You got to take a big hack.
Yeah.
And why? And this is the big thing. You gotta be able to like let it rip. You gotta do it. And I tell people that's the mentality. Like I've made so much mistakes. I've made more mistakes than like anyone else. Like I just learned all of this.
No, that's good wisdom, man. And I like how you brought up jobs. You and I have talked a little bit last time. And I thought it was intriguing, so I want to make sure we get to this, right? And now I think is a good time to segue to it. We talked as leaders of organizations and about how there's certainly challenges to that. There's great rewards in being a leader. And just kind of related to everything we just talked about, you view leadership, rightfully so, as this ongoing journey, right? You drew some parallels to sports. I'm sure you could draw some parallels back to software. And you said that the focus shouldn't just be on winning a single championship, but rather building a strategy that helps you keep winning month after month. Like how can you elaborate on that? And how you think about that in your business now, how you look at it with, you know, Tesla or Optimal Blue?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, it's really a mindset. Like you can't be about collecting trophies. You have to be about always improving and trying to make things better. Because a trophy may not even be your best effort. A trophy may get in the way of like trying to win. This is a complete distraction. And why I think sometimes, you know, why people, they're so big on trying to get this one thing. That's why it's so hard to repeat in sports. You take your foot off the gas. You think it's a good moment. You think you're so close. And I'll tell you a personal story that just like relates it. Look, we all learn more, we agree, through like Gemini, realize. But one crazy story is I didn't know till this year that my dad had the highest H score, which is a publishing score. He still works, he's 76 years old, for cardiology. That's never won the Nobel Prize. This is true. And so I came up with this idea because I'm good at domain matching. I was going to like try to help him win try to get him recognized because I could identify the 3,000 people. And I say to him, dude, I got this idea. We're going to win the Nobel Prize. I'm going to try to jimmy rig it so you could get some votes. And I came up with this idea to try to win. And he's like, dude, he's like, Phil, he's like, this is the worst idea I've ever heard. I'm like, why was such a terrible idea? And what my dad explained to me is that that would stop his progress. Ultimately, it would stop trying to do amazing things. And that's failure, right? The minute you stop trying to improve, if that event led you to not like achieve more, like if a championship stops you from wanting to achieve more, it's just, that's not what it's about. It's always trying to get better at your craft and do it. And look, for somebody like my dad, he's just trying to make humanity better. He didn't ever even view these things as like winning. And the only funnier thing about the story is I said, you know, my dad said is that the guy that had the record before my dad was my dad's former boss. So the reason why I bring that up is that is taught. That trying to like, you know, trying to win this championships, it rubs off on people. It does. It wasn't random that the guy before that, I think his name was Brownwald, that he was also there. That attitude, it rubs off. It wins championships more than more people could ever know. And you're like, well, what's the score difference? You know, the average that someone would win a Nobel Prize in cardiology, 60. His score, I think right now is, I think it's like 121. So it's like he's the Will Chamberlain. Like scored the most points, a lot of MVPs, rebounds. It just didn't, you
no
know,
championship.
Sometimes you just don't get. And I bring this up because all the other like things lead to it. And he doesn't want to stop. In fact, he just takes it year by year. This is always his approach. But he's chasing, always trying to like continue to do better. And I think, you know, that was, again, this was a moment this year. This was a big thing up until, and just to let people know, you know, I go to my mom. I said, you know, Mom, did you know the story of his H score? No idea. Even my own mom had no idea. He's like, yeah, well, we figured he's good at publishing and I think he's well known, but you didn't know like anything else because he's too busy. If he's so against trying to pick up these awards and dealing with nonsense, like he just wants to see, he's so laser focused
evolving
on the next play.
Yeah.
And that is something like you see of like, oh my God, that is like something so cool to see and what like I try to strive for. And that's like, you know, like the lottery tonight is big. My wife's like, oh, what are we going to do? Are you going to stop? No, I don't want to stop. Even if I win, it's not about and I work really hard. I work really hard at mortgages and I try so hard to get better every day that like I wouldn't stop even if I won. You're like, would you take a day off? Fine. Maybe I'd take a half a day, but not more because I have a lot of enjoyment in what I do. I love helping people. I love competing. Now, do I love all the stress of the mortgage industry and like all this? But you know what? That is a privilege. I'll tell people this. I want the pressure. I love the privilege. Every day I can compete is a privilege.
Yeah, it's a championship mindset, right? I love that you told the story about your folks and your dad, because I think obviously very humble, very hardworking, and I can see that that is in you as well. And you've learned a ton from that and built something great that's probably going to continue getting greater. But at the same time, you're offering to share that with the industry, which is wild, or any industry really. You've given a kind of a formula that could be used to be successful in any sort of business.
Well, there's a lot of people struggling right now, and I feel bad. You know, there's a lot of people hurting and, you know, a lot of people are self-doubting. And if you can save one person or you can turn around someone's career, what I would tell anyone is with this, that in business, one swing in the bat can be worth a million runs, unlike baseball that you can only max out at four. So some of these people, maybe I got one swing left or a couple of swings left. And you're like, what do? You're near the end.
Take them.
I need to turn things around. And I think I just wanted to bring some hope to people. You know, I wanted someone to listen there and really, you know, give them the confidence and also give them the confidence if they were trying to start their own company to go do it. This was a message of I want people to become independent leaders and to do something great and to have the courage. And I know that sometimes people have to take big risks, and there's a lot to lose. I get that. When I moved to Florida, I thought my wife was going to come with me. She didn't. Her birthday was Valentine's Day. I said, what do you want on Valentine's Day? I want a divorce. So I did not get off to a good start in Florida. There was a lot of things that didn't happen right. You know, I had to switch companies twice and start my own. There was a lot of fear. Now, it worked out well, and I got a beautiful baby, Madison. 7.5 months and a beautiful wife. It is working out great. But there was, when I was near my top or at the top, you know, I said there's three levels. at the top has been and never was. I was at my top when they made this risk. Most people will make the risk either where they were, they're either descending or they never did it in hopes of a spark. This was absolutely my pinnacle. I said, well, why would you take that such of a risk? And I would tell anyone, look, you only live once. And I didn't want any regret. And I also, even though business-wise, I was very successful, spiritually-wise, I wasn't like completely fulfilled. I wasn't happy. And I think that's mental health and wellness. You know, people like talk about it, you know, because this is what you see online. Like, hey man, I eat healthier. I don't drink. I eat everything organic, but you know, people say, well, I didn't drink today. Sometimes you need a spark. You need a reset in life. You need a second opportunity. I'm betting a lot, but I'll tell people, I also bet, I don't think there's anyone I know that's taken, and that was my dad's biggest thing, because he came from Czechoslovakia, and he had to escape in the middle of the night because of Russia invaded. It's different for us. It is different than when people have to escape. So no matter how hard you think you're between a rock and a hard place and you're not sure, you know, I would always tell someone, you know, you live once and, you know, make a calculated risk. Would I have done it differently? Sure, there are certain things I would have done differently. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't have ultimately made the same decision. I just didn't. I would have probably consulted. I would have thought this out a little bit more because I was a little impulsive.
Sometimes that's what it takes, though, is to be...
It does.
To take that risk.
It does. It does. And I tell people that because people are wondering what their next moves are in the industry or what they should think. Take whatever risk you need to take to make it happen.
I love that. I think it's a great, just bittersweet, beautiful way to wrap this up, Phil. I so much appreciate you being here with us today, dropping a ton of wisdom on our listeners, but also on me, and inspiring to boot. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
All right. Take care, Phil. And that's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.